Welcome to another episode of the Cognition & Co. podcast, Psychology in South Africa. I'm your host, Dylan Bennion. On today's episode, we'll be talking to Vunani Maboga, a second-year MA clinical psychology student at the University of Limpopo and mentor in the Cognition & Co. Masters Mentorship Network. While COVID-19 still got us in lockdown, we appreciate Vunani making the effort to join us over Zoom. Welcome to the podcast, Vunani. So good to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I've been wanting to be here for a long time.
Yeah, we've been trying to put this one together for a little bit of time, but we finally managed to find some time to do it. I'm so glad to have you here. This is all part of the podcast we've been doing about student experience and, you know, what it's been like to go through the process of being an honors to a master's student and everything that comes in between. I thought just to start us off, why don't you give us a little bit of background as to who you are and your journey through psychology?
I'm Vunani Maboga. I am a second year master's student in clinical psychology at the University of Limpopo. Additionally, I'm an intern clinical psychologist at the Mankweng Hospital, Mankweng Polokwane Hospital Complex. So my journey into psychology academic-wise, started at the Nelson Mandela University. Then that's where I did my undergraduate, the BA. I did my honors there. And then currently where I am now.
My journey also started off at Nelson Mandela Metropolitan, Nelson Mandela University. I know that you did some really cool work actually at NMU. You got the opportunity to get some writing published into a book. You want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Oh, yeah. So that was for my honors degree. So I for my honors research, I looked into males, or rather male victims of sexual violence. So that is an area where my supervisor, Professor Ngobo Sithole, that's her interest. So she gave me an opportunity to write an article, well, along with one of the students that I was writing the research with, to publish an article in a book. It was on the reasons why males do not actually report cases of gender-based violence. That was an experience that I'll probably never forget, because I'm being associated with a professor or a scholar who's quite big in the field.
Amazing. And it's an interesting perspective now, with gender-based violence being such an issue during lockdown, you know, to see the male's perspective and to understand that it's an issue for both sexes. All right. So what really got you interested in psychology?
Well, my interest in psychology was sparked by, I grew up in a community like many other communities around South Africa where there are a lot of misconceptions about mental health. These misconceptions are, of course, formed by culture. It can be religion. And, you know, growing up, seeing how these misconceptions fueled our attitudes towards people who are living with various forms of mental illnesses. So it was my desire to actually want to understand how, or rather what mental illness is, and eventually how do we treat this? The end goal is then to say, how do we make sure that people who are living with mental illnesses live a life which is much better than they are currently living? So it is that desire that led me to want to study the field of psychology.
Incredible. That's amazing. It's something that's so desperately needed in psychology in South Africa at the moment. And I'm sure that once you're a practicing psychologist, you will take that understanding and that drive back to the communities, right?
Essentially, yes. You know, I think it was a few days ago, I was speaking with one of my supervisors here that, you know, the role of psychology in communities, that's one area that has been somewhat forgotten. And I think, you know, if we remove psychology on its own from the community, what are we left with? So it is a good thing that you're doing at Cognition & Co., you know, trying to take psychology within the communities. You know, it's a very important thing. Psychology should be rooted within our communities.
I agree. I 100% agree. Excellent. We could probably speak about this all evening, but I think the students always desperately want to hear about applications and our movements into masters. So let's jump right into that. Tell me, I know where you ended up and I know your whole story, but you know, why don't you give us a little bit of an indication as to how applications went for you back in the day and where you ended up?
I applied during my honors year, like many of us. I applied at about three institutions. So it was Nelson Mandela University, it was at the University of Witwatersrand, and the University of Limpopo. At the time, well, I got rejected by Nelson Mandela University. That was very painful. And then Vets accepted me and the UL accepted me. My journey there was a bit challenging because it was my first time actually being engaged in this process of applying. You know, we hear about it superficially during our undergraduate, and then when you actually get there, you realize that this is actually a big deal. That was my little journey into applying for masters.
So obviously you said you interviewed at NMU and that didn't work out, unfortunately, which must have been difficult because you'd done your undergrad, obviously, at NMU as well as your honors there as well. How did that feel?
Well, you know, when you study at a certain institution, I don't know who lied to me, but you tend to think that, well, because I studied here, then a better chance to be accepted here. So I remember when I got the rejection, I was on my way. I think I got the email. I was on my way to gym. I remember looking at the tall building and it's like, this is the end. Where am I going from here? So it was very, very painful. And realizing that, you know, we invest everything. It's more than just academics. It's your emotions into this field that I want to end up as this thing. So it was very painful. I thought that at the time I was not even invited at UL. I was not even accepted at Vets. So I thought that, I don't know what's going to happen to me from here onwards.
You're so right there. You do. You definitely invest. You invest your heart into the institution. And to get a rejection, I think, from your base institution, I think it is really, really difficult. It's like these universities are throwing us flames, man.
Yes, they're throwing us flames. That's a painful thing.
So following that, obviously, you then ended up with an invitation to UL. So that obviously meant that you needed to then travel to Limpopo to go do this interview, right?
Yes. Well, UL is home, so I didn't mind the travel.
There we go. Okay, cool. Yeah, so then from there, give us a little bit of background as to how things went when you did your application there. What was the selections like? You know, how did things go? What did it look like?
Initially, the paper interview was a basic one. And from my side as the applicant, they didn't require much. You know, it was more from the referees. So the invitation, I think it's where they really want to know more about you. So got there very early in the morning. There was a lot of us. And they told us from the get-go that we were only looking for 8, you know, and I think we were around 40 or something like that. So you start counting and say, better than me. That one looks much better than me. So you enter the... Yeah, I think there were about 3 stages to the interview. Where I went through 3 stages and they were cutting people after every single stage. Whoa. So yeah, it was a very, I don't want to say emotional, but it was... You know, anxiety provoking. It was very, very anxiety provoking experience, realizing that I could be next. I could be going home next, or I could be going in next.
Yeah, I mean, that exactly. And from my experience, you do like the individual interviews and they can tend to get quite personal. You know, they talk about whatever you've written in your autobiography and they talk about, you know, perhaps past traumas, what got you into psychology. And it really can be emotional and very, very personal. And then unfortunately, if you aren't selected, it's very easy to attribute that interview as like a personal attack on yourself. And the rejection that you feel from that can be quite difficult to deal with. But luckily, you didn't get rejected.
Yes, I didn't get rejected.
In fact, when we spoke about doing this podcast and I asked you about what it felt like getting into University of Limpopo, you sent me the exact time and date that you got your acceptance letter. I mean, like, it's obviously a massive, massive achievement. And of course, you'd remember the time and date.
Absolutely. As I've mentioned, that we invest a lot in this journey. You know, we invest almost everything. And sometimes even our parents don't understand, you know, why are you studying for so long? You know, our parents are not very aware of this profession. So when I got this acceptance, you know, I knew that finally everything is falling into place and all that I've been telling my parents is actually happening. You know, you start looking at it that this is that next step to actually being employed. So I remember when I got it, you know, at the time, I was with my girlfriend at the time. And I remember screaming the words, my dream, you know, because it's been a dream for such a long. It was a moment. It was an experience. I remember, I think I was in my room. Yes, I was in my room. I was coming back from the gym at the time. Yeah.
Amazing. Honestly, I cannot wait to have that feeling, you know, like I'm ready for it. I've been ready for 3 years, you know, but I'm more ready than ever. But no, dude, that's absolutely amazing. And I'm sure like that gives the fact that you remembered the time and the date and everything. It just shows me how like paramount that email was in your journey to becoming a psychologist, because it is, it's that pivotal moment that says, now you get to finish up what you've been doing over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yes.
And you get to actually go back to your roots and say, you know, this started from the communities I wanted to help in. And now I'm actually going to be trained to go back into those communities and do exactly what I set out to do. And I think amazing. I'm so glad that you ended up in that position.
Thanks a lot. No, it was a remarkable experience.
So tell me a little bit more about University of Limpopo. It's not a university I've ever been to or interviewed at. What's it like?
We have a number of former Black institutions. University of Limpopo is one of those. I think back in the days, it was predominantly a Black university. So, you know, coming into the new South Africa, we still see some infrastructural, you know, it's still not as developed as many other universities. But in terms of the program itself, I don't think it differs much from any other institution, you know, and I mean in terms of the intensity of the workload. So intellectually as well, I didn't find it lacking because I'm someone who is very, I like to engage on ideas. So I found that, you know, in terms of the teaching, they did push us to interrogate some of the theories that we find in psychology. You know, they did push us to start applying those theories. So it's no different from any other universities. It's just that when you look at the infrastructure, you realize that there's a lot that can be done.
I guess that's also part of your journey as well. You know, like it's an area where you want to work, you know, and something that you want to develop, and it just gives you space to do that. But like you said, you know, I certainly don't believe that any university would have too much of a different program in terms of the fact that, you know, the HPCSA credits the program at University of Limpopo, regardless of any sort of infrastructural difficulties.
Yes.
You know, obviously they're going to push you. And I think, like you said there, learning to apply, you know, the theoretical stuff that you've covered over the past couple of years and what you're doing currently to a practical experience, I think is super important. And I think that's the difference, you know, why this training is so intense, why it has to be the way it is, why, you know, we can only take so few students because it's such an intense routine that you got to go through.
Yes, it's true. It's true. And, you know, at some point you then learn to look at the institution and say, well, the institution is actually based in a almost rural community, and we are actually trained to serve the people that are around here. So it did very well connect with where I'm from, that actually I am being trained where I really want to find myself placed at.
I love the idea of the rural community, you know, and I think that just shows that there's obviously grounding there to do further work within the community, whether it's immediately around it or, you know, spread further. So incredible. Tell me a little bit about what your days are like, you know, at least during, while you're in first year masters, M1, what were your days and your weeks look like?
A typical day of mine would usually start around 9 o'clock and it would end at around 4 o'clock. So those would be classes. So we'd have roughly maybe 2 classes on that day. So you can imagine how long one class can be. So it would typically involve, it would be maybe the lecturer lecturing us. And then after that, we engage and then we present a few, maybe they'd give us some tasks to present. And then, so that would be a typical day in class. And then when I have practicals, it would start maybe at 8 o'clock in the morning and then end around 4:30. Exception usually would be on Fridays. Those are days where a day would end around 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock there.
So while you do have some free time, there's still a lot of work that needs to go on behind the scenes, obviously.
Yes. So as soon as you knock off at 12 midday, you know that next week, Monday, you know, things are going down. So you have to kind of, I don't know, have a weekend, I need to prepare for Monday. You know?
Yeah, for sure. They're like, okay, so remember those presentations that you did Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? You got to prep them now.
Yes. And the funny thing is that even though I have to present maybe on a certain topic, you know, it's not me who's going to speak. You know, we all have to contribute to that. So what have you read on what he's presenting? So that was almost the difficult part that, oh, I know someone is presenting on psychodynamic, but I have to go and read as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this is the time to develop our understandings, especially of the paradigms. And speaking of paradigms, what would you say would be University of Limpopo's paradigm?
Yeah, so that was one of the questions that I had when I got there. So University of Limpopo is quite multimodal. I think they would call it is eclectic in their approach. So we were exposed then to major schools of thoughts, your humanistic psychology, dynamic systems, cognitive, you know, your gestalt. So the rationale behind that is that, you know, one shouldn't just focus on one theory. So the logic is to not force someone within a theory, but let them inform you on what theory to use or to look at them from. So we were exposed to almost the major schools of thoughts.
Yeah, and I think that's obviously important. You know, not everybody is necessarily psychodynamic at heart, but at the same time, you do need to understand what's best for your client. And if it means bringing psychodynamic aspects into it, then you have to have a good understanding of it. So I'm glad that they touch on a little bit of everything.
True. Although they did kind of encourage us that, you know, at some point you will find yourself loving something more than the other. So they did encourage that if that happens, that's okay. You don't find yourself saying, well, I can't love this more than any other thing because I'm trying to be eclectic. But, you know, acknowledge that if you find yourself loving cognitive theory more than the psychodynamic part, it's okay.
Yeah, 100%. It's totally okay. I mean, I think that's one of the things about psychology. So many of us are in it because we love the science that we're studying. You know, the social science makes us happy. And if there's a part of it that makes us even more happy, then why not be in love with it?
Yes, that's true. That's true.
I see a note that you've made here. It says that, you know, before you trained at a master's level, you thought you were a good listener. What can you tell us about that?
Many of us, yes. Many of us, if you go to someone and say, well, why do you want to become a psychologist? They'll tell you immediately, I'm a good listener. You know, I know how to listen. But listening is actually more difficult than that, because I think it's Carl Rogers who teaches listening is in itself therapeutic, you know, or rather being heard is in itself a therapeutic. So it takes someone who is trained to listen to have that therapeutic effect. So listening before then, I just thought was, okay, I'm listening to you. But then you realize when you're trained that, you know, there are things called reflecting back, you know, what is it that you are hearing that you then tell the listener that, is this what you're saying? And they have to say, yes, that's what I'm saying. Or no, that's not what I'm saying. And once they feel heard and they feel understood, that's the therapeutic part of listening.
Yeah, I know from my own personal experience in therapy that just speaking to somebody and getting that out can be cathartic, but also the way that they take what you've said in, process it and reframe or summarize it back to you is amazing to hear sometimes, you know? And that, I mean, as basic as what that sounds, it's such a difficult thing to do. It's the crux of what psychology is, at least inside that environment.
That's true. So it's not easy to listen. It's not easy to listen.
Listen to hear and not to speak.
Many of us do not listen. We just want to listen to speak and not listen to actually hear what someone is saying. And that's the dangerous part of it.
So that was your master's journey. And obviously now you are doing your internship at the moment, right?
Well, the internship journey, currently, as I've mentioned previously, that I'm currently doing my internship at the Polokwane Provincial Hospital combined with Mankweng Hospital campus. So both are academic or tertiary hospitals. So the internship program on its own, it's very highly academic. We cannot separate it from M1 because you still have a supervisor who supervises each and every case you see. And there's a lot of teaching that still happens. So we are still exposed to different therapies, different assessments. You know, we're still being taught those things. On the other end, the workload is quite different, intense in a way, and more than M1. You know, you think when you're at M1 that, oh, when I get to internship, it's going to be easy because we are only working. But you realize that there's a lot of work that you have to do, you know, internship sites. So you want to make sure that you're exposed to almost as many conditions as possible and you are able to actually manage those conditions. So now you find that now we are in the COVID pandemic, and now that you're realizing that there's a bit of a struggle there, you know, not many patients. Well, now at least we're in the level two now, at least coming through. In other levels, it was a bit difficult for us to get that much exposure that you needed because patients wouldn't come through, some out of fear, but some would be, you know, out of other reasons. So on its own, internship is not quite easy.
Sure. In fact, when we spoke about this beforehand, you'd said that internship was a much harder year than your M1 year, and that internship can make or break it for a lot of students.
That's true. There was talks that are internship sites making or breaking interns, because they are quite difficult. Number one, you're being assessed. You know, they want to make sure that when you're finished with your 12 months, are you really an equipped psychologist or not? Perhaps some internship sites are quite, I don't know, they are taking a bootcamp method to training. So I'm assuming that they can either make or break you. They can either make you love your field more, or rather say, am I even in the right field? And I'm not going to lie, because of the workload and, you know, the difficulty in transitioning, there were times where I found myself, am I even in the right field? Although it doesn't mean I don't love my field. I love psychology with everything in me. But, you know, there were those days where I questioned my love.
I think that happens with most things, you know, like, but if the journey was easy, if the road was easy to walk, you know, it might not be as worth it as what it's going to be when you eventually do get this done, write boards, do comp serve, and, you know, you're doing exactly what you set out to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I think if the journey is easy, I wouldn't be a well-cooked steak, you know, I would be half-cooked, you know, and
yeah,
you don't want half-cooked, you start with the A. I think you want to be one that knows that I'm here to work and I'm not here to flaunt or something like that.
Sure. And I mean, obviously it means that leaving a difficult internship means that whatever's thrown at you on the other side, you can handle. Something so scary must be getting into a room with a patient and knowing that there's something in front of you that you can't deal with or you can't handle. And that's why internship is there. It's there to prepare you for exactly that and how to handle almost any situation.
Because I remember when I finished my M1, you know, you question yourself, will I even be able to handle internship? But luckily, because of its academic approach, they actually prepare you for that, you know, transition, to say that transition where you realize that even when I'm done with the internship, I'll be actually able to know what to do. You won't find yourself as stuck as I was when I was in M1. Because in M1, I would be stuck with a lot of clients, you know. So internship is there to actually help bridge that gap.
In terms of the sort of counseling experience that you're getting during your internship, it must be, I'm pretty sure you've learned more about counseling in the 1 year or 2 years of studying that you've been doing at a master's level than all the years combined at an undergrad and honors level, right?
Yes, that's true.
I mean, it's very intense, and I'm just so excited for it. I tell you, I cannot wait, dude. I cannot wait.
well, yeah. I remember our first day of M1. You know, the professor, the HOD at the time, even now, he said, there's nothing new that you're going to learn in masters, but you're going to take everything that you've learned from your first year up until honors. You're going to apply it now. So now that's where you try to apply those things within a therapeutic room. I've been learning about community psychology. How does it apply in a therapeutic room? So you learn more about counseling on its own than you've learned throughout your years.
At least you get a safe space to practice, you know, and to try out those things and see where they fit and what works and what doesn't work and how you would change and how you grow during that time, I think is exponentially important.
That's true. That's true. I think I would tell some of my classmates that who you were in January and who you'll be in December will be two different people. This journey is going to change you. You're going to grow in many ways. You are bound to grow, you know. If you don't grow, I have to question if you're even being trained.
I agree. I mean, speaking from my experience in undergrad and honors, you know, I knew that when I started studying, I'd be learning a whole bunch of facts about psychology, about, you know, the world around me and stuff. But what I wasn't necessarily expecting is how much I changed, you know, in understanding and assimilating that information into who I am, you know. Over time, I feel like I went from being a person studying a field to becoming a person within this field and growing within the field. And I think that is only accentuated at a master's level exponentially. All right. From there, obviously, you're not in ComServ at the moment and you'll only write boards potentially next year. So I guess we don't necessarily need to go into too much depth there, but are there any sort of places you're hoping to be placed within your ComServ?
My interest has always been working in rural areas, you know, working with people that I know are more disadvantaged in society as a whole. So I'm hoping to be placed at a rural hospital, or if that doesn't happen, at a correctional services. And my interest in wanting to be placed in rural hospitals as well also stems from the fact that, you know, we know from much literature that there is a lack of mental health provision in our rural places. So that's where I wish to be placed. Ideally, that would be my first option. Then correctional services would be my second option.
That's so admirable, you know, to take the science of clinical psychology and apply it to those areas, because it's so desperately needed. I mean, you could read any research on South African mental health at the moment, and it'll tell you that we're not reaching the rural communities. We're just not getting there.
True. It's quite sad. It's quite sad. And it's not meaning to, I'm not meaning to critique, but many of us, when we are finished with ComServ, guess where we're going? Private practice. You know, it's quite sad. It's quite sad that you know, we're leaving those vulnerable people out there.
Well, I'm glad that we've got you, man. I'm so glad we got you. All right. Well, I mean, when we plan to do this podcast, you know, it was still earlier in the year and students were still applying and sending applications, getting referee forms and those sort of things. You know, as students starting to move into the interviews and stuff, what kind of advice would you give to them?
My advice to students who are applying is that, or who are yet to apply maybe in the next coming years, is that they should really work diligently in their applications. They must also remember that there's no such thing as a perfect candidate. You know, the idea that you're Dr. Phil when you get there, you know, you should just scrap it off your mind. You're not Dr. Phil, you know. So be genuine as possible with yourself, you know, because the people you're going to sit in front of are psychologists. They study human behavior. So, yeah, and those who are not selected, don't lose faith, don't lose hope. Do ask for feedback. I remember when I got rejected at one of my internship sites, I sent an email. I got rejected. What is the reason why I got rejected? What feedback can you give me? And they did give feedback. The feedback, you use it then to improve when you go to be interviewed elsewhere. So yeah, I think that's the only way you'll be able to grow on that.
Yeah, it's so difficult to get feedback, you know, especially at the moment. The universities are claiming that they've received more applications this year than ever before. And I think that's naturally one of the issues that we're going to see over the next couple of years with psychology in South Africa, is that, you know, because we can only take so few people due to, you know, supervisors, internship sites, funding, those sort of issues, that, you know, last year's applicants are applying with this year's new applicants, and it's going to just continue to get more and more, which I think inherently is creating a bit of an issue for the universities, because they're having to become more sort of strict and, I want to almost say, exclusive in terms of how they choose their candidates. So yeah, if you are ever able to get any feedback, I would definitely recommend that and use whatever feedback you get to apply to yourself and make the changes as suggested.
That's true. And I think also it would be also important that you can actually also learn from other people's feedback. Whoever gets feedback, if you didn't get feedback, maybe you got feedback. I can come to you and say, what feedback did you get? And then I can incorporate that in my own applications. So don't be isolated. This is a journey where we should actually stick together and actually learn from one another.
Oh, I love your mindset, man. It's totally the same as my mindset. You know, obviously with cognition, you know, I'm trying to build a community of students that interact and network with each other. And I love that perspective. Like you can get feedback vicariously through somebody else. If there's something along the lines that, you know, somebody else has been told, use that and apply it to yourself. This is not like a one track thing where your journey is completely your journey. We're all going through this together. And I really like your analogy there. You know, let's stick together and we can get through.
No, thanks.
Another interesting thing, one of the reasons why I also wanted to talk to you, was the fact that, you know, we do this Masters Mentorship Network every year, and I've seen your name come up twice as a mentor, and I'm so grateful. I'm so thankful that you've been a part of it. Tell me about your experience being a mentor in this program.
First and foremost, it's a wonderful platform, you know, not only for those who are studying, but also those who are working. You know, one of the greatest things is that it serves as a great vehicle for mentees, you know, as previously that, you know, you should learn from other people's experiences. I think it provides that network where you are able then to learn from other people's experiences, where we are able to share ideas. You know, I see a lot of students or potential students sharing a lot of ideas. So I think it's a very, very important vehicle. We do need such a thing. My own experiences, I've been with it for 2 years, and I think it's been a great journey. It's played a huge role in my growth as a person. I always loved picking someone up and making sure that they get somewhere in place. So I found it serving that purpose, that, you know, I'm able to guide someone through the process of applying, preparing for applications, and I mean preparing for interviews, and whether they make it or don't make it, also help them through that stage.
Amazing. And I'm so appreciative that you've been a part of it, and it's been good for both the mentor and mentee in these relationships. You know, I think it's very important. I'm thinking of doing a podcast specifically on the mentorship program sometime in the future, but without giving too much detail, you know, I just wanted to create something that, you know, could be supportive and motivational for the mentees, you know, having that pairing with somebody that's already been through it. But at the same time, we know statistically that it's difficult to get into masters. And I know from my own experience that I struggled with my mental health after being rejected from my first year of applications. And I didn't want anyone else to feel like that. At the time, I couldn't afford to see a therapist. I couldn't go to a psychologist. And I would have loved to have had somebody that was my mentor, that was an HPCSA registered psychologist, that could have helped me with what I was dealing with. You know, I managed to luckily put my rejection and my feelings of loss and my grief into something instrumentally that created Cognition and Co. But, you know, everybody has the ability to do that. And I wanted to give everybody the backup of having a mental health professional in case, just in case, you know, something didn't sit well with them in terms of their rejection, and they weren't able to process it.
Because I think a rejection of this kind, it hits you hard. Personally, also thinking from my own experience, when I got rejected, I remember I needed someone to talk to, but I just didn't know who. I spoke with my parents, it didn't work. I spoke with friends, it didn't work. It was very, very hard. So I can imagine how then others are feeling, and those who don't even have anyone who actually understands what they're going through. So what you've done actually, they say you've done a good, good thing. And I think it is helpful, especially to those who are continuing applying and are not succeeding in the application process, to have someone to say that, yo, let's try this, let's try that, let's try this, let's try that.
Yeah, I think it can be such a beautiful reframing process as well, you know, especially if you've done it a couple of times or you've applied for 2-3 years, perhaps having a mentor there, you know, to kind of not necessarily guide you, but to help you see things from a different perspective. I think that's really important. And I think that's definitely, I'm hoping, helping people out there.
That's true. I think what you're doing is really actually helping people. I should commend you for taking what you were feeling and molding it into something so, so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I thank you for being a part of it. And I really hope to see your name on the mentors application list next year again.
You'll definitely, I promise you, you'll definitely see me there.
Amazing, amazing.
The journey to becoming a psychologist is actually a very long one. You know, it's marked by many uncertainties and anxieties about the future. So you find yourself wondering whether will I ever make it into the program. So my encouragement to all you out there is that keep using Cognition and Co. You know, keep joining their networks. It's only through utilizing such platforms where you'll actually find answers to the questions you're asking. Chances of the question you're asking being asked by someone else are actually there. You know, you find that one is asking this question in this group. In the next group, someone is asking the very same question. So I think Cognition and Co. provides us with that network to actually find those answers. So to you, Dylan, I think I want to thank you once again for this platform, and may God bless you.
I've got the biggest smile on my face, and I'm so appreciative. I'm lost for words. Thank you so much, man. I'm so grateful for your kind words and everything you've helped me through so far. And what you've done for the students, I think is amazing. And I think even just the students hearing your stories now about your own perspective, it definitely humanizes, you know, what we're going through here. And I think that's what we need in this field. You know, we need that human essence back in this, so that we can find our hope, and you know, people that are struggling can use that hope to continue to get to where they need to be, grow, develop, whatever needs to happen in order to reach their full potential, to self-actualize and become psychologists.
Yes, self-actualize.
Well, we'll leave it at that. We'll wrap it up here. But thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm so appreciative once again.
No, it's a pleasure.